It's hard to see Jesus from far away. In the distance, something is lost. There's someone really tall standing in front of you, or a lilting cloud of fog blurs the view. Even on the big screen with a larger, much larger than life projected image of Jesus, it's just not the same. To really see Jesus, you have to get close up. You can't stay on the fringes. Remember Zacchaeus, the vertically challenged guy who climbed up a sycamore tree in the midst of the towering and hovering crowd to catch sight of Jesus as he passed by? Zacchaeus knew he had to see Jesus. Remember how Jesus responded to Zacchaeus? He called Zacchaeus even closer. He said, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." Zacchaeus was determined to get close enough to see Jesus. And Jesus came and stayed at Zacchaeus' house. And Zacchaeus' whole life changed. Before Zacchaeus got close to Jesus, he was what we would call reprehensible. He was a cheat, the worst sort of cheat. Zacchaeus was a tax collector. He defrauded his own people for his own benefit and for the benefit of the invading foreign government, the Roman Empire. He was the worst sort of crook, the kind that flaunts the fact that he is a crook. He lives right there with you and flaunts his ill-gained wealth. But he wanted to get close and see Jesus. And Jesus came to stay in his house, and Zacchaeus was changed to his core. He said, "Look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much." That's what happens when you get close, really close to Jesus. That total change of heart is the result of moving from the sidelines and getting really close enough to see, really see Jesus. Today we hear that some Greeks are in the crowd of folks who've made the pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the Passover festival. These Greeks are either Jewish converts or Romans who are there as part of the occupation. There's no clear agreement on that, and for our purposes today, it just doesn't really matter. What matters is that these Greeks go to one of Jesus' disciples, Philip, and ask to see Jesus. These Greeks want to see Jesus. Philip then goes to Andrew, and then Andrew and Philip go to Jesus to tell him that there are Greeks here who want to see him. An indication that the condemnation by the Pharisees that the whole world has gone after him is coming to fruition. But we don't have any record that the Greeks at the gate ever got to see Jesus that day. The presumption is that they, like all the world, would see Jesus really up close. Really see Jesus and what he wanted to show the world in the time of his crucifixion. Jesus responds to the news that the Greeks are at the door wanting to see him with a brief parable. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. One must wonder what Philip and Andrew thought about Jesus' response to them telling him that there were Greeks at the door. But we'll never know what they were thinking. Gail O'Day, who is a New Testament scholar and author of the John section of the New Interpreter's Commentary, tells us that the word fruit is Jesus' metaphor for the life of the community of faith. Again, hear these words of Jesus, but with that metaphor. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain, But if it dies, it bears the life of the community of faith. O'Day further opens this parable for us. Jesus uses the seed parable, she says, to show that the salvific power of his death resides in the community that is gathered as a result of it. The salvific power of Jesus' death resides in the community that is gathered as a result of that saving power of his death. Jesus' saving power resides in us, then. We are the community that is gathered as a result of his death and resurrection, are we not? This is who we say we are, after all, as Christians. Jesus' saving power for the world resides in us. We are those who have the saving power of Jesus in us. We do not have the power to save anyone. Do not misunderstand that. Jesus is the one with the saving power, but we are the ones in whom that power resides. And with that comes a call to respond and live our lives in reflection of that reality. It seems to me that part of what is being said here is that the health of the community of faith is a result of our living into that reality, of our showing the world by our lives and our actions that we have been given this gift of new life in Jesus. The health and life of the community of faith is dependent upon those in whom resides the saving power of Jesus. That is all of us, or so we say. We need to look like and act like and live like we have gotten really close to Jesus. That we have seen Jesus up close, not just from a safe distance or on a big screen. Jesus expounds on this by showing the fruit that is us, the community of faith, what Dietrich Bonhoeffer refers to as the cost of discipleship. Jesus follows the seed parable with this: those who love their life lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. And those of us steeped in a Christian faith tradition have heard these words or close similarities often enough that they can wash over us with little lasting residue. But these words of Jesus are so important, so central to his message, that they appear in all four of the Gospels. In order to follow Jesus, you must lose your life. Lose your love of the life the world offers, the life that the world venerates as valuable. Are we sure we want to get close up and really see this Jesus? Ask Zacchaeus what it means to lose your life in this world. It opens up a whole new way of living. In this moment, we hear that Jesus' hour has come. The crucifixion is looming on the horizon. It will be soon. There is a sense of urgency in the words of Jesus. Now my hour has come. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. That's the plan, the dream of God, that when Jesus is lifted up from the earth, all people will be drawn to him, will be brought very close, will see him face to face, no longer hiding in the shadows or staying a safe distance away from the life-altering effects of being truly close to the one who expects that we will happily lose the life we think we love and enter into new life with him. A life that is not driven by the ruler of this world, a life that is not rewarded in the values of the world, a life that requires us to come to a crossroad of decision and to a cross. There is no requirement that any of us come up close and really see Jesus, but the offer is always there. The first step can be daunting. It requires letting go of self-interest and self-driven needs. Moving closer to Jesus and getting really close to Jesus means putting down our egos and picking up a cross of love. Jesus longs to draw us to him, to show us the way to true life. Step closer. Move closer. Draw closer. You can't really see Jesus from a safe distance away. You got to get really close to see Jesus. There really are no bystanders in Christianity.